Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Getting It Done. Your hosts for the show this week in America's history suggests that our country is going through so many major changes. We are fighting a pandemic health issue, and now a continuous race issue that has fledged the country since its early beginning. Our show today is a little different than most often. I normally play straight on through and let you hear various individuals make comments, and normally I will play the recording and we will sit and just listen and review it at the conclusion of the show. Today, I have to do a little bit differently. I mean, we will play a certain portion of what's being discussed, and then I will come back and make some comments about what I think those particular individuals are saying to provide certain a level of clarity. So without any further ado, let's see if we can go ahead and get started. We're going to start off with Don Lemon on Friday's death. This week of George, who was killed with an officer who just did a what you call a public lynching. Let's take a listen.
So in that same vein, because we're talking about this, these viruses that are infecting America, imagine when you said, I do for you, I'm doing for me, what I'm doing for me, I'm doing for you. Imagine if that was me on the ground, how you would feel. As a friend, as someone I spend a lot of time with. Imagine how people around this country feel when their friends, like you, both of us are a different background, when their friends say nothing, when they do nothing, except send out a tweet or say, oh man, that's terrible. I can't believe that happens. And then when they see everyday racism, they don't stand up for it. Imagine how that feels to people of color in this country. It feels terrible. Is that really being a friend? And I'm not saying you specifically. You understand what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying.
I totally understand. And, you know, the only word I can use is just hurt. It all hurts. We didn't have the plan, the show plan, the way it unfolded. We just couldn't let Williams go. I mean, he was saying what you and I have heard, you know, you've heard in your own heart. I've heard from so many people that I love that they're so afraid that it's going to be them. It's going to be their kid. And white people roll their eyes like, oh, come on, man. This only happens like once in a while. It doesn't have to happen that often. If every time it happens in your mind, it seems to go unanswered in terms of why it's okay. So we kept them on just so that people could hear how scary it is for someone to watch that and think.
But that's the problem, Chris. It's not that it happens. It happens a lot. We just don't see it. We're just seeing from the video. This is the reason that Colin Kaepernick was taking a knee. And then people were upset, and the President of the United States having the nerve to call him and others who were standing up for this sort of injustice, to call them sons of bitches. This is why people are standing up, so that it doesn't lead to this, so that you aren't sitting at home saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. Look at what they're doing to this man. This happens all the time. This is why he was doing it. And the nerve and the gall of people to say, oh my gosh, stop doing this. I want to enjoy my football game. Now think about that now in this context. How selfish that sounds. And how you might feel if that was your loved one on the ground.
Yes.
And that there were people who have been protesting this all along and who have been fed up for years. And they're trying to get your attention by something as respectful as taking a knee at a football game. Yet you can call them sons of bitches. But then you look for an excuse for this police officer in Minneapolis saying, well, there must have been something that led up to this. The guy must have been resisting. Clearly, this just can't be the act of a police officer or someone who is supposed to be protecting the community. Yes, it is. People who continue to look for excuses. Well, what is the rest of the video? Where is the rest of it? Wasn't he resisting? He must have been doing something terrible. He should have been in this position. Maybe he should have been complied. How many should have been complying? How many more excuses do you need to make before you examine yourself and say, okay, maybe I need to wake up a little bit and take a good long look at what I've been doing. Maybe I need to understand or realize that the environment that this president has trafficked in can help to lead to these sorts of situations where people.
I wanted to stop right there for 1 minute to sort of analyze and talk about what Don Lemon is referring to. With he's talking to another announcer about George Floyd. Chris Cuomo is the person that he's talking to. This is something that most of you who are alive today, if you don't study history, will notice that this goes all the way back to the lynching of black men as far back as slavery. Black men were lynched all the time during slavery, all the time. If they attempted to look at the owner wrong, they were killed, murdered, sometimes lynched, sometimes shot. They were considered property. Now that they're not property, other things have happened to them. And these are human beings, but as you look at this picture and you see that this person was killed the way he was killed, gives the impression that there's more homage given to dogs than to human beings, black men as human beings. When a black man had to spend as much time as he did in jail as a professional football player, having pit bulls fight and going to jail for pit bulls fighting and spending 3 years of his life in jail, here we have a person who is being treated less than a dog. Let's continue with what we were listening to.
People think that that sort of behavior, meaning the people who are doing these things, the people who are calling the cops on people falsely in Central Park, the people who are chasing people down the street in Georgia and killing them, that you may begin to think that your actions are normal. That you may begin to think that you as the preeminent voice can do things that are inhumane to other people and it will be accepted. The game was given away. The woman in Central Park said, I'm calling the cops and going to say that this scary black man did something to me, knowing that the cops would come there and probably be on her side and not his. The police officer, according to your witness, he looked him in the eye. He told the police officer, hey, stop it. You're going to kill the man. The cops said nothing. Maybe you shouldn't be on drugs. That gave the game away. That is the game. We can do it, and we can get away with it. And no one is going to tell us otherwise. We're not going to go to jail for it. Maybe I'll lose my job. I'm going to keep my pension, though, because guess what? The police association is going to fight for me. That is what has been happening in this country for years. And that's why the Black Lives Matter folks are out there. And that's why people are protesting, Chris. I'm not condoning people protesting, but let me tell you, people are tired of living in an occupied country, a free country, a country that's supposed to be free, yet they are occupied. So they are frustrated, and they are angry, and they are out there, and they're upset. You shouldn't be taking television, but I can't tell people how to react to this. I don't know how it is to live under those circumstances in those neighborhoods. I do live in Harlem, but I am lucky enough that I have this job that keeps me protected from many of those things. Other people don't have that. I'm sorry to keep going on and on. But this is how you and I talk, and this is how we continue to talk. And I think that every person out there, listen, if you're black and you don't have a white friend, get one and tell him what's on your mind. And if you're white and you don't have a black friend, then get one and let him tell you what is on or her what is on their mind. Because that is the only way we are going to solve this. It is not incumbent upon black people to stop racism. To stop this, it is incumbent upon people who hold the power in this society to help to do that, to do the heavy lifting. And guess who that is? Who is that, Chris? White people. I don't talk much, but when I do, I make it count. I think that the protests make sense.
I don't think you can process the anger without them. Now, you start committing crimes, and it's a riot. That's not protest.
That's not that.
That's
what you're saying.
It's different, but at the same time, you know, I remember what Dr. King said about this, and I understand that it's not easy to keep emotions in check when nobody seems to be keeping them in check when you are the victim. I get it. What hurts most, I think, in this particular fact pattern, other than the duration, is why the hell were the other cops standing there doing nothing? Nobody is trained to put a knee on a throat.
That because that it's not about training. It's not about police training. It's about the way we have been trained in society to react to those things. It is okay. Now, imagine if that was an 18, 19, 20-year-old white kid on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think those officers would be doing the same thing or reacting the same way?
That's the troubling question. That's the meme that's going around right now with the cops, with the black kid on the ground saying hello to the white guy in camo with the AK-47 and the mask who was protesting in Michigan. That when it's white people with guns and they're out and they're angry and their faces with cops.
Didn't see any of that.
Everybody's civil.
Didn't see any of that.
But
the flag burning, getting in police officers' faces, yelling at police officers armed. Armed with heavy weaponry. Didn't see any of that. Did you see anybody with their foot on anybody?
No. I mean, you know, you've heard of people make it a joke, but it's funny because it's tragic and sad. If black people said, let's all go out and get guns and start the protest, that would be the fastest change of gun law culture in this country.
Yeah.
If you started to have African-Americans buying up AR-15s or whatever you want to call them and going out and protesting legally with legal weapons, you'd see a change in the laws.
Yeah.
And that's sad.
Yeah. And if you see a black man who has this platform, a television show, who has the gall enough to tell you how it is, guess how many people are going to call him racist and a race baiter? Who cares? Check out my social media feed and see what happens.
Who cares?
Actually,
you say what's true and you say what's real, and look, you're not getting
exactly
it from a second source. You lived it.
Yeah, I don't care. Go for it. I really don't care. You can save it or you can put it out there. I do not care. I am so frustrated. Listen, I've got to talk about the big story as well that's happening in the news, and that is coronavirus. But I'm so sick of, as a person of color, especially a black man, as my actions, my thoughts, whatever I do is being seen as more aggressive or somehow sinister just because of this shell that I am in. I am sick of it. I'm sick of having to monitor myself because of this body that I'm in. It is exhausting. It is mentally and physically exhausting, and that is how people of color feel in this country. And you know what? I love you for listening to me here on television, and I love you for doing it in person. So thank you.
I love you. You're a gift to me as a friend, and you're telling people what they need to hear. And you're telling them because you do care as much as anybody I know.
Thank you, Chris Cuomo. I'll see you soon.
I love you, brother.
Love you as well.
What you just listened to was a discussion about the killing of George Floyd on CNN, discussed with Don Lemon.
Today,
and
I'm sharing a sentence you need to eat.
And Chris Cuomo about the realities of people of color living in America. And just because him saying certain things on this television show, that the feedback he's going to receive from the public is going to be outrageous. And I don't know whether this was day before yesterday's presentation that he gave. I don't know what the results of that was, but I thought it might be interesting for those of you who are listening to my show, don't listen to my show, hear precisely what somebody is saying that makes some sense. Because they're always shooting in a different direction. Now, we're going to move on because, you see, that's not the only person who has something to say. And we're going to move on to somebody else listening that did something and said something. Just check this out.
Ella Baker said, until the killing of a black man, black mother's son has become as important to the rest of the country as the killing of a white mother's son. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until this happens. She said that in 1964, and we're still echoing those same cries today. It was hard to listen to that interview.
feel so much pain. Because I'm tired. We had black children. I have a 15-year-old daughter. You look at my son. I'm raising a son. I don't know what to do with him. It's just, it's hard being black in this country when your life is not valued. And people are worried about the protesters and the looters. And it's just people who are frustrated, who for far too long have not had their voices heard. And so, you put me on after his brother, and I feel like I lost my brother. And nobody cares about the video. They had a video on the Bob Harper. And two different listeners looked at that video and declined to press charges. And so for those of us who have a mistrust of the system, it's very hard for us to do anything else other than just to cry this morning. And then hope and pray that we are not sitting next to Ben Crump one day. That's about all we can do.
Bakari, your father was shot more than 50 years ago. 50 years ago. And we're sitting here this morning and watching it happen again. So where do you find the hope? How do you tell your son and daughter that it's going to get better?
I don't know. I mean, maybe Dante has the answer. I don't know. You know, I try to keep hope. I try to keep faith. I keep telling my children they can be free. You know, I want my kids to one day be able to grow up and be the host of New Day. I want them to be able to be a United States senator or president. But, you know, what happens if they get pulled over and they comply? What happens if they get judged by a father and a son who just are on a good old-fashioned Georgia lynching? What happens if they get served a no-knock warrant like Breonna Taylor? I mean, what happens if that – how do you raise your children in this America to understand free when we see these images of them being gunned down in the street and a knee in the back of the neck for 8 minutes like a dog? So I don't have that answer. Other than every day, I just tell them I love them. That's all I can do.
Dante, I'm not sure there is an answer necessarily, although you point to Angela Davis, who says it's not enough to be non-racist, you have to be anti-racist.
Did you know heart problems are the number one cause of death for Americans? The number one way to prevent...
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that is the hardest to learn for people who are not in the space of learning about racism in this country. There are a lot of people who believe that racism ended after the Civil War. They say that we fought a whole war over racism, yet they don't acknowledge the fact that the Confederacy was there to remain, to keep the institution of slavery alive. After that, we had Reconstruction, and then we had Jim Crow, we had the Civil Rights era, and it seems that things that people have been talking about back in those times, and especially during the Civil Rights era, are still happening today. When Martin Luther King was forced to discuss the riots that were happening, they blamed him for the riots, and Martin Luther King said that the language of the unheard is why these riots are happening, and that America has failed to listen to the cries and to the promises of freedom and justice that they have promised since the founding of this country. But yet, as we still see today, we still see African Americans are not being treated as humans. As Bakari said, you know, I have friends and family who have kids of all ages. And when your children are leaving home, when they go to school, you never know if they're going to come home safe. And that's not an exaggeration. That's a real, honest fear. That's a palpable fear that we've seen. And unfortunately, even when it's on video, it seems not to matter because then they'll be the detractors, the people that are in opposition of freedom and justice, will look through anyone's background, whether if it's something that happened in the past they will try to bring this person down and make excuses for the reason why this person died. Even when they're on the ground face down, three officers on top of them, when they're telling you they can't breathe, people will look to find reasons why this person was killed instead of going to the root cause of the problem. And that, until we can figure out and understand why that continues to happen, why this psychology of racism has perpetuated not just in police, but in this entire country, in the entire system, the justice system of this country, things like this, unfortunately, will continue to happen. And you will see, unfortunately, the results of the language of the unheard. You will continue to see these riots happen until actual, real justice is served.
Look, after Ahmaud Arbery was killed, I noted I've walked into dozens of construction sites in my life just to look around. Jonathan Capehart of the Washington Post sent me a text and said he would never do that because he fears for his life. It just shows how different things are if you're white or you're black. Dante, I also want to put up on the screen an image that's been shared thousands of times over the last day. It's a picture of the police officer with his neck on George Floyd's, with his knee on George Floyd's neck. And it's a picture of Colin Kaepernick kneeling. Bernice King tweeted out saying, if you're unbothered or mildly bothered by the first knee but outraged by the second, then in my father's words, you're more devoted to order than justice and more passionate about an anthem that supposedly symbolizes freedom than you are about a black man's freedom to live. I know that these pictures resonate with you.
They do, and unfortunately, I saw this image of the police officer with his knee on George Floyd's neck, even as he was saying that he couldn't breathe and he was losing consciousness, and the bystanders were pleading for the police officers to spare him his life. And Dr. Bernice King was right on. It's something that I saw immediately, and unfortunately, it just continues to happen in this country, but that was something that was a visceral image to me, was when I saw the officer kneeling on his neck, and I thought about, this is why the players are kneeling. This is reason 1 billion why the players are kneeling. And you saw that image going around social media. And it's true. It's really hard, because there are so many people who do work, who do good work in this space. There are a lot of folks who go every single day and try to make this country live up to the principles that this country was founded on. And yet and still, here we are in 2020, during the pandemic, on Memorial Day, where you see this happen.
Bakari.
And the players have stood up. And, it's something that Colin Kaepernick went out on his own initially to do this, and he's now no longer has a job. It's been years now, but he no longer has a job because he was protesting and trying to stand up for people who no longer have their lives.
Bakari, we've got just about a minute left, and you've been with us all morning long and outspoken. And needless to say, on social media, there's been some criticism, people saying you're condoning what's happened overnight in Minneapolis, and you're not. And it's not about condoning violence. No one wants to see buildings burn. It's about understanding why they're burning.
Yeah, I think that one of the things we've been crying out for is for white people in this country to have a sense of understanding about the pain and trauma that it is to be black in this country. And until you have some semblance of understanding and hear our voices, I was talking to TV Jakes not long ago, and you can teach me arithmetic and you can teach me the English language, you can teach me physics and science, but you can't teach me blackness. And one of the things that I think that more people need to do is just take a moment to listen and listen to those voices as they cry out in Minneapolis, listen to them as they cry out in Brunswick, Georgia. The plight to cure racism in this country is not on the shoulders of black men and women. It's on those individuals who don't suffer from this level of oppression on a daily basis. And so I hear those people. And those same people, John, that are chastising these protesters are the same people who were applauding the white boys carrying the AK-47s on state capitals earlier in the spring and summer. And so I just kind of shake my head at that. But at the end of the day, we lost another life. And
this is a great tool for anybody who wants to get in shape or already in shape, wants to.
I think the sad commentary about where we are in this country, people like me think this country is vanishing and the dreams thereof are vanishing. It's because I'm afraid we'll probably be here in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or another month with another George, another Brianna, another Ahmaud. And for many black people in this country, they just pray to God it's not one of their loved ones. And that's an unfortunate state.
I'm going to stop and pause there because there's so much that was stated in that particular presentation about where we are and what we have actually been able to witness and experience throughout our lives. And not only out of our lives, our parents' lives, their parents' lives, on and on and on, where lynchings were taking place, and it was set up as an example of what I can do to you, and there's nothing you can do about it. The fear that I have that most people don't understand is that this particular kind of situation can get out of hand. During my time and my parents' time, we might have been obedient to what was going on and talked about it and tried to fight it in another way. However, these young people today are not like we were. They've experienced certain levels of, I guess, freedom, if you want to call it that. And prior to this present president, they've really experienced freedom from another level. Now, to push them back into a picture or a time frame where I lived, my parents lived, and my great-grandparents lived, is a place that is forbidden. And these particular young people today have weapons. They have not turned all those weapons in. And eventually what's going to happen, and you heard me say it, that those young people today are not going to stand for this nonsense. We're going to move on right now and hear a panel erupt over some conversation about race and triumph, and Trump, brother. Let's give a listen.
You know what this is? Because believe it or not, this weird little blue tool actually sells thousands of units right here on Amazon.
The New York City lawyer caught on camera berating people for speaking Spanish and threatening to call immigration, trying to keep a low profile tonight, dodging reporters. I'm going to bring in now Tim Wise. Tim is an anti-racism writer and activist who's the author of Dear White America. CNN political commentators Tara Setmeyer and Steve Cortez are here as well. Good evening. So, Tim, CNN is aware of at least three separate incidents this attorney has been involved in. And one of the things that's ironic is that on his website, he offers services in multiple languages, including Spanish. When you saw this story, when I saw this story, I wanted to talk to you and I wanted to get your thoughts. What do you think?
Well, look, if the problem were just this one guy, then it wouldn't be worth having this conversation. But the reality is, we've got video after video and incident after incident. Just in the last couple of weeks, how many white folks are calling police on black people for absolutely no reason? We've got videos of people melting down on YouTube, yelling at baristas at Starbucks about bad service and being discriminated against because they're white men and they can't catch a break. We've got story after story of young children, we're talking middle school age kids, being taunted with chants of build the wall, build the wall. And let me tell you this story. This is heartbreaking. A friend of mine who I've known for 35 years, his family lives in New York. His kid, middle school kid, was on a trip in Washington at the Smithsonian about a week ago. Very diverse group of middle school kids. They come across another group of kids, white kids, bunch of them with, you know, Make America Great Again t-shirts and hats. And one of the white kids in that t-shirt looks at his shirt, points at it, says, "This is made of cotton. Thank you for picking it." Says that to one of the black kids. None of the teachers, none of the chaperones do anything to this kid. And it nearly touches off a fracas. They had to get the kids from the diverse school out of there before anything went wrong. This is the kind of stuff that is happening. For every incident on tape, there are dozens of incidents that are not being caught on tape, and this is filtering down to young children. There's clearly something wrong culturally in this country that we're not addressing.
Tara, to you now. I mean, and listen, Tara, you've lived in the New York City metropolitan area. We've hung out here together. We know what New York City is like, very diverse. When you see a young, attractive, successful businessman screaming at people in Manhattan because they're speaking Spanish, what did you think?
Yeah, you know, this guy obviously is an equal opportunity xenophobe. You know, he's looking at this spectacle like this. It's disturbing, of course. You know, what are you doing in New York City? And I grew up in New Jersey. I mean, it's a melting pot in the Northeast like that. So to see these kinds of outbursts, it's like, what is happening? But I will tell you that, you know, after watching more and more videos of this guy, he's obviously got a problem. There's something wrong with him. He's clearly a racist. He's an equal opportunity xenophobe, like I said. One time it was about Latinos. Another time it was someone that was speaking in a Slavic language. Another time it was just an effing foreigner he called someone. So, you know, this guy is the epitome of something that's been unearthed, I think, since in the era of Trump. And as someone who is biracial, who has lived in New York and New Jersey, who's lived in Washington, D.C., and who's been all over the country, all over the world, actually, I have never seen the kinds of ugliness that I've seen from people who you wouldn't expect, right, since Trump came into office. And in the Republican Party, I have to say, the party that I have been a part of and as a conservative for most of my adult life, to sit back and make excuses for it, or to stay silent and just kind of act as though this is not happening, is very disconcerting for me. And they should be ashamed of themselves for not acknowledging that Donald Trump had created an environment to divide people and make it okay because of the way he behaves and the things that he has said.
I need to get Steven. Steve, what do you say?
Look, this guy's an ass. I don't know how else to say it, right? He's an ass. He's making fun of people for speaking Spanish. It's offensive to everyone. It's certainly offensive to me as a Latino. To try to affix the behavior of one man, to ascribe the behavior of one jerk to Donald Trump, to me, is an absurd leap of logic. This guy's a jerk. I don't see the political bent here. I just don't.
Okay, well, hang on, Tara. Hold on, Tara. Tara, hold on. Please. Every time we have a video and we put it on, right? Someone who supports Trump says, this is one person.
Right.
And to ascribe that to one person is just outrageous. Then we put on another one, and you say the same thing. And we put on another one, and you say the exact same thing. And another one, and another one, and another one. So how long does that excuse hold water that it's
Donald,
just one person?
Donald,
every single person here has
Donald,
just said
Donald,
it's
Donald,
more
Donald.
Than one person. It's more than
I'll
one person.
I will answer that, all right? As a minority, all right, as a son of an immigrant who had a dad who, by the way, spoke with a heavy accent, embarrassed me as a kid. I'm ashamed of embarrassed me, but that's
just
the
way. You got three minorities on this panel. Go on. We get it. Go on.
Okay.
Make your point, please.
All right. But no, but it's important, Don, okay? So I'm saying I've lived this. I get it. Yes, it
you
is
can
important.
Be a minority
so
and still be a bigot.
No. Hold on.
And,
I
you
get,
can be a minority and still
idea.
Not be aware of bigotry.
Don,
you can still be a minority.
I'm still talking, Don.
You can be a minority and still make excuses for bigots and racists and homophobes.
I'm saying
and
I get the idea of I get the idea of being other is what I'm saying. I get the idea of being out of the norm, right? Of speaking with an accent or speaking a different language. I get it totally. I get it in a visceral sense. I also believe this about America. Thank goodness. This country, which
can
was once fundamentally
can we stick to the point?
Right?
Steve, stick to the point.
Yeah, I'm on point. Can you let me – can you make
I have,
my point?
I've got a minute. Can
fundamentally
you just stick to the
racist.
Point?
You're not even letting me get to my point. This
it's
country
taking you too
was
long.
Once
come on, move it along.
Fundamentally racist. All right, I'll be quick. This country was once fundamentally racist that believed that black people could be owned, elected twice a black man. Named Barack Hussein Obama.
Don,
tell me we're fundamentally racist. And we elected
Donald Trump.
We had a lot of time.
Go ahead.
He took up a lot of air.
Yeah.
If Barack Obama winning twice
means that racism is fundamentally eradicated, then I guess Steve would argue that there's no real sexism in Pakistan because a woman, Benazir Bhutto, was elected there twice. That's an ignorant seventh grade level argument that has just been made on national television. Surely, surely we can do better than that.
But we also can just use the examples of Donald Trump himself, the things that he has said from, you know, the Judge Curiel stuff, that he couldn't be a good judge because he was a Mexican. You know, the comments that he has made, the bigoted comments over and over again, have given people like this jerk off license to be able to think it's okay to behave this way. Look at how many of the people running for Congress have said things that are inappropriate as Republicans. Look what Blankenship did in West Virginia. Thank God he lost. You know, talking about China in Mitch McConnell's family. And you got this guy down in Georgia running around in a deportation bus, for goodness sake.
Right.
This kind of stuff, you would never see another George W. Bush.
But my point
is that these people are feeling emboldened to do it because the President of the United States says there's good people on both sides in Charlottesville.
Okay, let him respond. Let him respond.
Here's the thing, okay? This Schlossberg, again, I don't know how many ways I can say it. He's apparently a racist. He's an ass. He should be paid no attention to. But here's the thing,
Trump $500
now is the, well, so what? What does that
so
mean?
Why explain
the law
why
large...
people feel it's okay to behave this way at Trump rally? Why is it okay?
Racism has become racism has become, it has become not the scarlet A, but the scarlet R. It's become the scarlet letter of the left. When they don't want to talk policy, when you all don't want to talk about what we are doing in the Trump movement for minorities, by the way, for their prosperity and security, what you do is you call us racist, and it's a way of maligning us, it's a way of marginalizing us and taking us out of the debate.
Who's
once
talking
you put
about
our
honor,
right?
And first
of all, no longer Donald Trump.
Hold on, 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 Tim. See, why are you personalizing this? No one calls you a racist.
No one.
Yeah.
And
no one
called a racist.
No, right, so you're saying
not on this show, I've been called a racist constantly.
You're saying someone from the left told this guy to go into a restaurant and call out people for
not speaking. That's not what I said at all, Don. What I'm saying is, because I am
a supporter of Trump, I have been affixed to this jerk, even though I have nothing to do with him.
And
that's
the thing. When children are walking around,
I came out. When children are walking around,
he's wearing a Make America Great hat again.
When children are walking around in Trump gear, talking to black children about picking cotton,
the
law of – no, let me finish. I didn't interrupt you, really, except for the $500 comment. Let me finish. If anyone had been walking around in Obama shirts and hats in 2008 attacking white people verbally or making $500 contributions to Barack Obama's campaign, you know full well that you would have made an issue of it. You would have asked Barack Obama to condemn those people. And
no, I wouldn't.
Certainly
and
not
sir,
no, I wouldn't.
You, no, I wouldn't.
You would.
Look, the law of large numbers, okay, when you have tens of millions of people, you're going to have crazies on both sides. This guy's a crazy. There are.
I just couldn't stand this continuing because this presentation was made 2 months ago before this present killing. Last month, we had a person shot running down the street doing just what? Because he's a runner. He stands out in terms of going right and running through the community for exercise. And because as a black person he was running, he was shot by one former policeman. Then this happened not just 2 days ago or 3 days ago, maybe 4 days ago now. Now, you have people seen precisely on TV because of the use of the cell phone, precisely how black people have been treated. Even when this occurred during John F. Kennedy's time when he's president of the United States and we were fighting for desegregation, and dogs were used and water hoses were used on black human beings because they were trying to get their voting rights and trying to get fair treatment or just to eat in a place without a place person's having a drink of water where the sign says only for white people. These are the kinds of things that have been going on for extremely long periods of time.
And if you didn't abide by it, you got hanged, or you got shot, or you got beat up. And a society says, we hold these truths the self-evident, that all men are created equal in our democratic ideals as far as the democracy is concerned. But evidently, congressionally, a written piece of paper doesn't make that much of a difference, even to the platoon of the proclamation that was signed by Abraham Lincoln. And anyway, I just couldn't go any further with this, because here I wanted you to hear the different kinds of statements that were made before this thing happened. And now we're going to go on and back to the issue so you can actually hear Brooke Baldwin talk about the same thing.
Is it really possible to add 10 to 20 yards to your drives to double the number of fairways you hit?
Amazing grace, how sweet is the sound that saved a wretch like me.
That voice you just heard was that of Minneapolis City Council Vice President Andrew Jenkins. She joins me now. Excuse me, Ms. Jenkins, just that your voice, that song, just everything that's been happening. You represent the neighborhood where this incident took place. You have said that George Floyd's death felt like a symbol pulled for a name on the neck of Black America. Thank you so much for joining me today. Can you just talk about how this death has impacted the community you represent and you personally?
Good afternoon, Brooke, and thank you for inviting me to be a part of this conversation. You know, before I speak on your question, I do want to, you know, publicly offer my own deep, sincere condolences, sympathies, apologies to the family of George Floyd. What a tragic, traumatic incident to happen to our city, to my community, to our nation, at a time when we are dealing with this this terrible coronavirus. We're in the midst of a pandemic, and unfortunately, we have two viruses that we have to deal with in America, and that is the coronavirus, as well as the virus of racism that has infected our entire society for far too long. The people in my community are pained, are traumatized. You know, we have had so many high-profile hashtag moments in the city of Minneapolis, from Philando Castile to Jamar Clark, Terrence Franklin, and Thurman Blevins, and of course Justine Damon, who we cannot forget, and we saw justice in that case. We saw justice for Justine. We absolutely must see justice for George. That is what community is seeking. That is what community is asking for. And the violence, I do not condone the looting and the violence. I do fully understand the outrage that people are expressing.
How would you, there are so many emotions as I'm sitting here listening to you, I'm having my own, I'm surprised at my own emotions on TV with you, but I've just, as a white woman, aware of my own privilege in this country, I am so angry. And I can't even begin. So
Forgive me.
No, it's a human emotion, Brooke, and I think what sparked so much outrage is that there seemed to be no regard for humanity or human life in the video that we all witnessed. The officer sat there with his knee on Mr. Floyd's neck for an unbearable amount of time, almost 10 minutes. That is unconscionable. And he had a smirk on his face and his hands in his pockets like he was totally relaxed. And I think that lack of humanity, that lack of respect for black life is what has enraged so many people in this instance.
You talk about these high-profile, you know, deaths and hashtag moments and describing, you know, George Floyd's death there. And, you know, we know the mayor we know the officers have been fired. I'm just thinking of justice, Andrea. And I'm just wondering from your perspective, as you represent this corner in this city, what justice looks like for you in this community.
Right. So, you know, I very early on, very publicly called for the firing of the four officers. And so I'm glad that the mayor and the police chief responded to those requests and did the right thing. But justice won't be served until these officers have been charged. That is what people charged and arrested. And so that is what people are calling for. That is what will, I believe, calm the gathering, the rallies, the protests, the riots. I mean, because at some point last night, what was a peaceful protest that I participated in became a riot. And so I do not condone that in any way whatsoever. However, again, I do understand the frustration. And the only thing I think is going to help us to resolve and bring down the temperature in this situation is if our county attorney, Mike Freeman, does the right thing and presses criminal charges against what we all witnessed. A crime on that video.
I think so many Americans they've watched what happened in Central Park. They've seen what happened in Minneapolis. They saw what happened in Georgia. And, you know, Lord knows the years, right? This is just.
Don't forget the young lady, hashtag say her name,
yes,
that was murdered in her bed.
Yes. And my question, Andrea, is what. I'm getting a lot of incoming just messages from, you know, white viewers who are enraged, who don't know what to do with their emotion. And so as you talk about how, you know, you call a cancer, it's a disease in order to cure it, and the same as I heard you say earlier with regard to racism in this country, what do you want to tell white America about what they can do, not just to listen, but to act?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Brooke. And, you know, I wish I had all the smart answers to provide to white people. A, stop killing us. B, give black people opportunities to live full, healthy lives. That means access to employment. That means access to safe and affordable health care. That means access to safe and affordable housing. We are in the midst of a pandemic right now, and we need to see resources going to the most vulnerable people. We've already identified who the most vulnerable people are. However, nobody is providing those kinds of resources. There's no testing. There's no drive-up testing in my community. There's no PPE in my community. We need the federal government to be providing resources to cities and states
And we need white America to be calling on these resources in these underinvested communities, these over-policed communities. We need white people to stop perpetuating the system of racism. And I'm not calling any one person a racist, but I do know that people who benefit from it are the only people who can end it.
It's a tough conversation. It's a necessary conversation. Andrea Jenkins, thank you.
Okay, once again, we've heard some women talk about it. We've heard some men talk about it. All the same thing that is occurring here now has been going on for a long time.
I wish I could buy Amazon or Netflix.
Let me see if I can cut this off right here because this is where people are, for some reason or another, just asking some silly questions about what can we do. It's the same thing that I heard back in the 1960s and 70s when the last riot that I remember took place. The same silly statement was made. The same kind of statements are being made right now about what can we do, and nothing was done except we ended up with having a February as Black History Month. Can you see how stupid that is? To have a 1 month out of the 12 months, because so much was left out of the history books, to have just 1 month devoted to what should be in the history books in the first place. Now you're not just catching just that one thing. What is occurring in the penal institutions where people who are sick because of this disease are dying? Because there's not anything being provided to separating them while they're in the penal institutions, and many of them who are in these penal institutions have no business being in the penal institutions in the first place. When you have people who are being trapped in a situation where there's no medical assistance being provided because they are 75% to 85% in the penal institution are people of either Asian, African American, or Hispanic. It's crazy. And so we're talking about those particular people being killed who are institutionalized in a criminal system such as, and here you have a person killing people who are actually innocent of anything, or just the thought of a check that was not even wrong, that just a woman making a mistake about a check. And it blows my mind how so many women are seem like are involved with making accusations about Black men. I don't understand that either. And then once they do it, like Bill Cosby sitting up in a doggone institution, who a woman was paid $185,000, come back 20 years later, and now he's sitting up in jail and blind and sick. 80-some years old, what can this man do to hurt anybody? This is ridiculous. This whole situation is just fully unacceptable. And then you have people who are being shot, people who are being harassed, profiled, and then the sickness that's come along. So we don't have that much time left, but I would like to see if we can find something that doesn't take that long for you to hear. And if we had the time, I'd love for you to hear something that was stated by Al Sharpton, because of course, you know, he is on it and talking about it more so than anybody else. But we only have about, let's see, 5 minutes left. Let's see if I can do something right here with Brooke Bowman again. Let's see. That's 6 minutes. Well, we'll listen to some of this.
Stupid loser. Sit down. Very nasty. Racist. Those are the words that President Trump used speaking to three of my colleagues this week. Three journalists. Three black women. They are Yamiche Alcindor, April Ryan, and Abby Phillip. These are three consummate professionals. A grade. They can take these insults. They don't need me sticking up for them. But still, there is something so wrong with this. It is beyond disturbing. It is ugly, and I'm angry. And if you missed it, here you go.
On the campaign trail, you called yourself a nationalist. Some people saw that as emboldening white nationalists. Now people are also saying
that such a racist.
There are some people.
Sit down, please. Sit down. I didn't call you. I'll give you voter suppression. Excuse me, I'm not responding to you. I'm talking to this gentleman. Will you please sit down?
The same thing with April Ryan. I watch her get up. I mean, you talk about somebody that's a loser. She doesn't know what the hell she's doing. She gets publicity, and then she gets a pay raise, or she gets a contract with, I think, CNN. But she's very nasty.
That's
up to him.
You want them to bring in Robert Mueller?
What a stupid question that is. What a stupid question. But I watch you a lot. You ask a lot of stupid questions.
Trump loves to punch. But this is something else. This feels personal. Among the multiple reporters this president has insulted this week, three are African-American women. And these are not only fair questions they're asking of him. These are the most important questions about this White House. And it pushes his buttons. And this is where he goes. Oh, and the president today talks about respect.
When you're in the White House, this is a very sacred place to me. This is a very special place. You have to treat the White House with respect. You have to treat the presidency with respect.
These women have conducted themselves with the utmost respect. The person who apparently has none, the president. Meantime, he is firing back at former First Lady Michelle Obama. She gets deeply personal in a new memoir, including opening up about Donald Trump, saying that she will, quote, never forgive him for endangering her family. She writes, quote, the whole birther thing was crazy and mean-spirited. Of course, its underlying bigotry and xenophobia hardly concealed, but it was also dangerous, deliberately meant to stir up the wingnuts and kooks. What if someone with an unstable mind loaded a gun and drove to Washington, she writes. What if that person went looking for our girls? Donald Trump, with his loud and reckless innuendos, was putting my family's safety at risk, and for this, I'd never forgive him. Here is the president's reaction to her book.
And I guess she wrote a book. She got paid a lot of money to write a book. And they always insist that you come up with controversial. Well, I'll give you a little controversy back. I'll never forgive him for what he did to our United States military by not funding it properly. It was depleted. Everything was old and tired. And I came in and I had to fix it.
Well, hopefully today you had an opportunity to hear so many different versions of our levels of racism. You heard Donald Trump, the creator of so many lies, it's hard to imagine in listening to him what is the truth. But more importantly, how poorly he has spent looking at our country in a way that allows us to be continued separated. Hopefully you've had an opportunity to listen to some truth and understand the difference between what is truth and what is a lie. This has been Getting It Done, and I have been your host, Dr. Walter Daniel.